We've got cloudy, then heavy rain, high of 67. Tomorrow, partly sunny and breezy, high of 58. Friday, mostly sunny, high of 59. Saturday, high of 62 and sunny. And sunny again on Sunday, high of 68. So we've got a sunny weekend coming up after rain the next couple days.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. And I am very happy to welcome this morning Scott Kessel. Welcome, Scott.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Get closer to the mic. There you go. Okay. Scott is a super volunteer. He's volunteered many, many really cool places, and we're going to get into all that. But this show is all about encouraging people to get out there and volunteer because it enriches your life so much, and I think you can verify that and attest to that. So why don't you talk a little bit about maybe one of your first volunteering experiences or why you got into volunteering?
Well, the main agency that I volunteer with is Liberty Corner Fire Company, and that's in Berners Township in Somerset County. And I joined that. A friend of mine from high school suggested that I join because he and his brother had joined. And this was back in 1989. So I joined, and now 30 years later, I'm still there. It takes up most of my volunteer time. But ultimately, it's just a privilege to be there. It's a privilege to work with people and volunteer with people who care about other people. So that's the gist of it, and it's of course it's important work. It's the fire department, so when people call, it's important that that we're staffed and that we arrive.
And you guys are busy.
Yeah, we're kind of busy. We probably do about 450 to 500 runs a year.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. And you have to do training for that too, right? Don't you have to do ongoing training?
Yes. So the initial training is Firefighter 1 to be a certified firefighter in the state of New Jersey. And then, of course, from there, there's plenty of courses that you can take. And then there's ongoing training. We do at least two drills a month. And there's other training just to keep you current on what you're doing. So it does take a bit of time. But ultimately, it's a rewarding thing overall.
Yes, and you're also another volunteer aspect of your life as you help with the Great Swamp Watershed, right? You do stuff with those guys.
Yes, the Great Swamp Watershed Association. It's a very important organization. What they do is they have education and outreach programs, and they do water quality testing and things like that because clean drinking water just doesn't just come. It needs to be protected. And they do a wonderful job of that. And they do a lot of outreach from the Great Swamp all along the Passaic River. So they do quite a bit of education in that area. That's also important work.
And how did you find the Great Watershed? Did you meet somebody or you just kind of wandered in one day? Or how did – because the firefighting, you said the high school friend brought you into that. So how did you get involved in the Great Swamp Watershed?
Well, the Great Swamp Watershed Association, I got involved in that through, if I remember correctly, my wife does some print work for them and some other materials that way. And we realized that it was a valuable organization, so we joined the organization. And they do fundraising is naturally something that a lot of volunteer and nonprofit organizations need to engage in. But they also have a lot of interesting educational things that we participate in. And then there's work days where you tend to the trails and other things on their properties to allow these educational activities to occur. So that's valuable work, and it gets you out in the woods, and it's just an enjoyable place and a great group of people to volunteer with.
Yeah, we did. We had them on the show a few months ago. I can't remember what day, but we did have them on the show because I'm always stalking people to be on my show, as you know. And I'm grateful that you came on because you definitely live and breathe volunteering in so many ways. And I am going to give a shout out to Sue Kessel, your wife, because she runs Chatham Print and Design. And we had our super successful fundraising breakthrough breakfast last Friday in Basking Ridge to benefit Room to Read on International Day of the Girl. And she did a fabulous job printing all of our bookmarks and our table tents. And it's just been so much fun to work with her, and putting this whole thing together was a lot of fun. So Chatham Print and Design in Chatham. She does, especially for the holidays coming up, if you need any table tents, or they do all kinds of invitations, and they do things for all the gala season when that starts, and it's just a definitely family-owned, wonderful place. So Chatham Print and Design, check them out, right?
Yes, indeed. Thank you. They do a lot of work for nonprofits and these types of things. So, yes, thank you for the mention.
Do you ever volunteer at the print shop?
Actually, yes.
Really? Yes, what do you do there?
I help them with their computer things.
Okay.
And some things, and sometimes I help them do some deliveries if it just eases the load and the burden in the shop.
Yeah, there's a lot of driving in your voluntary work. Chatting before, we talked about the driving, because that's when I went to the Watershed event, and they were doing a little shuttle service between the parking lots, and I'm like, Scott, oh my gosh, you were the driver.
Yes, the Great Swamp Watershed Association often has various fundraiser or membership drives at their facility, and unfortunately the parking at the facility isn't very large, so they park actually at the Jockey Hollow, the national park, and I help shuttle people from that parking area to the event. It's pretty cool because you get to meet all kinds of different people.
Yeah, I'm like, hey.
It's pretty neat.
And you should use the fire truck to do that, too.
That's a whole other level of permission that's required.
Yeah, no, I know. I know. So, well, what is your role in the fire company? Because everyone has different, I'm sure, roles of like jumping in the fire and holding the hose, and I know nothing about this, of course. So can you tell us what your role there is?
Right, so I am a firefighter there. So naturally, when there's a fire, I can be one of the guys on the hose and things like that. But the nature of the volunteer fire service is when there's a call, the members go to the firehouse and get their gear on. And we have a number of people who are qualified to drive the truck. So at any given day, at any given call, myself or different people may be driving.
We need a driver, yeah.
The truck. and then at any other given time, you may be in one of the firefighter positions. And once we arrive, all of us do what needs to be done. And that's an important part of the volunteer fire service as a whole, everywhere in the state. They all need volunteers. And everybody does what they can. All of these organizations, I would encourage people to visit their local volunteer firehouses, if for nothing else, just to say thank you and say hello to the people working there. But also see if there's anything you could do. All of these agencies need members. Mm-hmm. They need volunteer firefighters. And, of course, they could also use your financial support. And once you sign up, you'll quickly see that everybody does a little bit of everything to make everything run. So my title is firefighter. At any given day, I could be a driver, a firefighter. And also, when we're not at calls, there's activities at the firehouse. There's training. There's things, organized drills at a certain time. But there's also a lot of other training and just being familiar with your area, familiar with your equipment. So in that area, I serve as a mentor in the fire department. And a lot of what that is getting new people accustomed to the way we do things, where equipment is, what it's for, how it's used, being familiar with our areas, where are hydrants and things like this, so that when it is an emergency, we're ready to go. We show up, we do the job, and everybody's familiar with what they're doing, and everything ends up running smoothly.
Yeah, and I think they have a junior firefighter program, too, where you can start when you're 16, I think.
Yes, we do. And a number of volunteer organizations in the state, whether it's the fire department or your local emergency medical service, your EMS or first aid squad, different agencies may or may not have them. But ours, yes, you can join when you're 16, and you can be a junior when you're 16 and 17. And what that is really is it gives you the familiarity with what's going on. Mm-hmm. And you get to really see if it's for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you become 18, that's the age when you can become what's called an interior firefighter.
Okay.
When you're a junior, you're not allowed to go into burning buildings.
Okay.
When you turn 18, you can get your Firefighter 1 certificate, and then you can be a firefighter to go into burning buildings and all that.
Yeah, and well, for some people that might be curious about it, but the big issue with a lot of people is time. Do I have time to devote to this? And I mean, it's not a small task to go through the training and do that.
Right.
So does it take 6 months of training, or what's the process if you want to get your Firefighter 1?
Yeah, so Firefighter 1 is generally handled at the county level fire academies. And yes, it is a time commitment, especially at the beginning. Firefighter One activities are usually two nights a week, depending on the course, two nights a week and maybe a couple of Saturdays or something like this. And yes, it's several months to get the certification, and once you have it, you're a firefighter. But some fire academies also recognize that young people, maybe in college, want to do this. So many of them offer during the summer 5 days a week, so you can condense the amount of time required. And that's become popular with many of our younger members. You're home for the summer. You could knock out your Firefighter One and then go about finishing college and then getting on with life, and you've already got your Firefighter One certificate. So it becomes that's very helpful.
Yeah. And don't you once a year have like the Firefighter X Games or something where you all kind of do sporting events and tests and things like
that? So these are probably popular things in many places in the state and probably around the country. But we participate with a group called the Tri-County Firematics Association. And that's a group of there's 10 fire companies. One of them hosts every year. And then the other nine companies compete in various timed events. There's hose rolling and ladder climbing and these different types of things. So it's a fun way to get together in a non-emergency manner with our neighboring fire companies and do things, you know, in the camaraderie type thing.
Can the public come out and watch, or is it just for you guys?
Yes, yes, it's open to the public, and naturally, depending on who's hosting it, it depends on where it will be. But the public is invited to see these events, and it's kind of a fun way of getting together.
Is it usually in the summer, or does it move around?
It's usually the second Saturday in June for our organization. Yeah.
All right. Well, people will have to put that on the calendar, because that would be really cool, I think. Right?
Yeah. It's a fun thing, and people come out and see it.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Scott.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. And we are on Facebook Live today, which is at Happy Hunterdon, but it's just on me. We don't have Scott on the camera yet, but we'll try and figure that out in a little bit. Anyway, Scott is a volunteer in so many aspects of his life and has been doing it for 30 years plus. And we were talking about all the different things he does, and there's always a driving aspect to what he does. And so in 2005, he jumped in his car and drove to Mississippi to help the survivors of the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. So you want to tell us why you felt compelled to jump in your car and go down there and help?
Yeah, well, it was largely seeing the devastation on TV, and you know, people needed help. So having the fire department for a number of years, I thought maybe there was something that I could do to see if I could help in some manner. And just the way things work out is I got a contact from somebody who thought the same idea. Let me go see what we can do. So I called him, and I said, you know, maybe I could come down and help. And he said, sounds good. Meet me at the intersection of Mississippi 57 and some other road. And I ended up meeting him at a church where I stayed for about 3 or 4 weeks, wow, living in a tent, trying to help people mostly recover either their belongings or try to in some way help put their life back together. A lot of it involved trying to remove sheetrock and insulation and things from people's homes before mold set in. This is the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. It was a town called Ocean Springs. And even into October, it's hot and humid. So a lot of this work needed to be done rather quickly to avoid black mold and these types of things. So it was just a really rewarding experience to be able to help people in that manner. So, yeah, I just drove my pickup from Basking Ridge, New Jersey, to Ocean Springs. I loaded up my pickup with donations as much as I could, diapers, baby food, these types of things. Drove down there and pretty much made myself available to see what I can do. And it was a rewarding experience when people come up and thank you for what you've done and all that. So I would certainly do it again if I could.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that was a time commitment. You just, you know, take time off from work and go to do it. But ultimately, it was really worth it. And it's just an example of when you volunteer your time at a given organization, let's say the fire company, you get that mentality and that idea in your head that, oh, people need help. Well, I can go and help. And the next thing you know, you're in Mississippi. but that overall becomes a part of you. It's not something you do. It's something that you are.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, I got that from a friend, Pete, at the firehouse. And he would often say that being a firefighter is not something you do. It's something you are. And he's right. It's something that you are. And it carries into many other areas of your life.
Absolutely. And do you have any stories from your time there of the residents that you helped and what they said to you or what their circumstance was or just stories that you remember, people you talked to that touched you? Or
yeah, it's funny. I believe that somehow everything is connected. So when I drove all the way down there, it was kind of funny to work in somebody's house, helping them, you know, sort out their belongings or get their house in order. And then you come to find that they're in Bernardsville.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the next town over from where I just drove. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
And different people react in different ways. I remember going to one person's house, and it was a home. It was a one-story home on the bayou. I guess in New Jersey you would refer to it down the shore on the lagoon. You know, they were right on the water. And a huge yacht had washed up. It obviously wasn't theirs. It was on their front lawn. They had lost everything. The house was, you know, still standing, but at one point there was about 30 feet of water. And I remember getting there in the pickup truck and ready to come and help. And the guy asked me if he could get me anything. You know, because he had a cooler with ice and some drinks. And he asked me if he could get me anything. And I said, no, thank you. But that's just the way so many people were. They were happy that we came to help, and they would always offer us something. And that was quite something. And then some people, people had lost everything. Their homes were destroyed and all that. And to find the guy's wallet in a pile of debris made the guy's day. Because now he has his ID and he has some confidence that, you know, that we can find stuff for him. So little things like that. And, you know, I remember once a 7-8-year-old girl came up to me and thanked me for saving her house.
Amazing.
So that was a big thing. People were very appreciative.
It's our humanity is based on helping others, right? Like you were saying, these people have lost everything, but all they wanted to do, you go back to the core of humanity, all you want to do is connect and help someone else.
Right.
And the world is so tiny. And I mean, the coincidence with the Bernardsville thing, I mean, I run into people all the time, and it's like, you know, they we're related, or they're, you know, you share a common connection all the time. It doesn't take that long to figure it out.
Yeah. And the Dalai Lama has said, our prime purpose in this life is to help others.
Absolutely.
And if you can't help them, at least don't hurt them.
Yeah. So. Yes. Yeah. Are you a Dalai fan? Dalai Lama fan?
I'm a fan of a lot of the things that he said.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you a big reader? Do you read a lot of different philosophical?
I have read a couple of his books. The Art of Happiness is one of them.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's an overall thing, I think, in a lot of what I do in my life and a lot of what volunteers are all about. Our prime purpose in this life is to help others. Of course, we all have to have a job or a business, and we have to make money to pay for housing and food and things like that. But if we can incorporate volunteering in whatever capacity, I think it just makes for a better life to have some more purpose. And if helping others can be that purpose, then that's the way to go.
Well, and I think you just do it over and over again because you take the initiative and you do it. And I think for a lot of people, it's hard to take that first initiative, or they're more fearful of meeting new people, or they don't know how they're going to feel, or they don't know how much time it's going to take. So part of this show is to encourage people to hear different stories and different things and different ways to volunteer. And then it's just like anything else in life. You might not find your perfect fit the first time you go volunteer at a soup kitchen or help with a fundraising event. But if you reach out to enough places or wait or bump into somebody, you'll find the volunteer organization and the opportunity that's going to fulfill you beyond what you can even believe.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of different organizations that you can volunteer for. So if you go and volunteer for one thing and you find that maybe this isn't for me, that's okay. There's a lot of different things that you can do. So for me, the fire department is one of the big things. But for other people, it might be with various religious organizations or other civic organizations that do good in the community in one way or another. Habitat for Humanity is one thing. There's food banks and soup kitchens and things and all kinds of things to help people or animals or the environment. There's all kinds of things for all kinds of people to do, and there's a lot of important work that needs to be done. And a lot of it is done by volunteers, and I think you see it in Room to Read. There's a lot of important work that needs to be done in literacy and education and things. And when volunteers can do that, you have a huge group of people that can provide this help.
Yeah, and for me it was, I mean, I grew up volunteering my whole life, and I did the soup kitchen and things, and there's a lot of those more traditional organizations that people have heard of and traditional roles that you can fill, which is great. But the thing with Room to Read that drew me in was it was business related and attacking a social issue. But also, you know, I had a business background, and they give us zero budget to run a chapter, but they give us 100% creativity. So because of my kids were still little, I was able to come up with all kinds of crazy ideas on my own time, in my own way, and just implement them and execute them. And no one told me no. And it's been a blast. So that was, I wanted to have creative authority and freedom to do whatever. And this has been the perfect avenue for me.
Yeah. And that, I think that also goes to a lot of things in the volunteer services. You take the fire department, for example. You know, when there's a call, you respond to the call. And you have certain times where you have to be there for a meeting or a drill or something like this. But so much of it is compared to a regular 9-to-5 job, for example. If you finish your work in X amount of time and then you're kind of still there, you have to be at work or at a certain place for a certain amount of time. It's a little different in many volunteer aspects, because you're there to do a job. You're there to do some activity. And when it's complete, you know, you're done with that bit of it for now. So that gives people flexibility to volunteer and do things as they can. And in a lot of cases, you have to work around family or job commitments. Mm-hmm. But somehow it ends up working out. If you really make it an important part of your life, then it becomes an important part of your life, and you do it. You do it because you enjoy it. You do it because it's a worthy endeavor. You do it because of the people with whom you're volunteering and working. And it makes it all worthwhile.
Well, and the other aspect of your situation is that you own your own business, and so you've got a little bit more flexibility, and you also have more initiative in you because you've got your own business and you're an entrepreneur. So let's plug the business a little bit and tell people about what you do.
Oh, thank you. So my business is Liberty Corner Computers, and I help people with their computer problems in their homes and their home offices and small businesses and things like that. So it's nice to be able to work for yourself. So I do things that most people know that they should do but maybe don't bother, just things like security and backups and things like that. So it's nice to be able to work from home in the community so I can serve as a volunteer. And I think a lot of people would be surprised. Of course, every town is different. But in many cases, the people that are showing up on that fire engine when you call are professionals who have their own business. You know, at any given time, the fire engine might show up with a computer guy, a salesperson, an attorney. These are people who drop what they're doing to come and help you or whomever needs help. And when that's all done, they go back to work and go back to their business and do what they need to do. And on it goes. So depending on the town, you may be surprised at who it is that shows up to help you.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm so grateful. And the nurses are high on my list, firefighters, EMTs, because, you know, and what my one friend likes to say, he goes, everyone likes to bash lawyers until you need one. Right?
Right.
And you hope that you never have to have an EMT or if I, you know, you hope you have, but, you know, you're super vulnerable at that stage if you're in that situation. And you know, the people like you that come in, you're like, you know, you're a gift from God at this moment. And, you know, you have to stay calm and get to your task and figure it out. And, you know, it's triage and it's quick, right? And common sense. And
yeah, exactly. At any given time, you can go from doing mundane things in your office or in your business to, you know, having to save somebody's life or property or something like that. So, yeah, it adds a bit of excitement to the day, certainly. But this is important work that needs to be done. And, I look at it, if not me, who? You know, somebody has to do it. And I just happen to be lucky enough that I can do it and that I enjoy it. And many other people in my company, and you'll find this throughout the state and just the volunteer fire service as a whole, people do it because they love it.
Yeah. It is addictive. I say volunteering is addictive. It really is. And I mean, because once you, like you, you're a serial volunteer person. Well, and the other one of the more traditional aspects of your volunteer work and also interesting is your cat people, right?
Yes, we are.
You and your wife are cat people, but I've never heard of hospice cat or hospice care for cats. Is that new?
Yeah, it's referred to as FOSPICE. It's okay, a combination of foster and hospice. So my wife are involved. My wife and I are involved with animal shelters, principally the Mount Pleasant Animal Shelter in East Hanover. They do tremendous work in getting cats and dogs adopted. There's a tremendous amount of work to be done there, too. There's so many cats and dogs that need homes. So my wife and I have been fostering cats for a number of years. We probably fostered 30 or 40 of them in our home. And usually they're younger cats. You get them ready for adoption. You learn their personalities. Maybe when they're younger, they need some medication or they need to be socialized in preparation for their spay and neuter surgery. And then we help them recover from that. And then they find their forever home. And that's rewarding work as well. But we also are involved with this FOSPICE activity, where basically it's older cats who probably aren't going to get adopted. They've been in the shelter a long time. Maybe they're not the cutest cats. You know, everybody wants kittens and young cats. So we take the older cats into our home so that they don't live their life out in a shelter. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, when you take some of these animals out of the shelter, they really become like a brand new animal. So we have two now. One is named Rosie Posey, and she's kind of considered my office cat. She hangs out in the office with me, snores most of the day. And she's about 15, and she's older and really wasn't going to get adopted. So we saw her and said, well, we'll take her. And then the other cat we have in FOSPICE, her name is Princess Sassy McMittens.
I love that.
That is the best name for a cat ever. And when we found her in the shelter, she was depressed. She was, you know, in a shelter alone. We didn't think that she had much longer. And it turns out that now it's October. We've had her for a year.
Aww.
And she just keeps on ticking. So they become new animals when they have somebody to love them. So we've adopted a number of cats, we've fostered a number of cats, and now we have these two Phospis cats in our home, and they're a delight to have.
Do they like each other, though? Because sometimes cats get territorial, right?
You know, they really do. They get along with our cats. Sometimes they can be fussy because, well, they're cats. but they really do get along, and I think it helps these Phospis cats to be in a situation where they're with other cats. They're not just alone in a cage. With very little hope of being adopted due to their age or because.
Yeah. You know. Well, I think my dad loves his cats more than he loves us, truthfully. Right now they've got Norman, who was a farm cat, but then Norman got beat up in a really bad fight, and so they brought Norman home and then now domesticated him at home so he could recover, but he keeps trying to sneak out. So.
Yeah. It's valuable work. These are living creatures too that deserve care, and that's something else. If people are interested in helping animals, you might consider dropping in on your local animal shelter and see if there's anything you could do. They could always use financial support, of course, but in many cases they could use people to help foster animals, and you might be able to make a difference that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to switch gears a little bit, and you heard about how Scott can get in his car and drive to Mississippi to help people in Katrina, but evidently that wasn't far enough for him to go because he also had a tremendous experience volunteering in Antarctica. And you want to tell us about that?
Yes. So ever since I was a young boy, I wanted to visit Antarctica. So I got the chance to work there for about 6 months at the end of 2009, the beginning of 2010. And I worked in communications. I actually worked for a fire department there, the Antarctic Fire Department in McMurdo Station. And while there, I got the volunteer bug. And so I did some volunteer activity there in addition to my contract position in communications. So I worked or volunteered in there's a small library in McMurdo Station. And that's another one of those situations where it's important work that needs to be done. People like to have a place to go after work, and certainly it was a place to meet people. They had an internet connection, so you could contact people back home and things of that nature. But it wasn't something that they were going to pay to have staff for, so it was staffed all by volunteers. And I had a wonderful schedule on the base, so I worked 3 days, and then I was off 3 days, so I had a lot of time to volunteer. So the library was a place where I was able to go and spend some time surrounded by books, and I was able to have the library open at all kinds of odd hours so other people with odd schedules could come in and also enjoy the library. I also volunteered with something called shuttles. So shuttles is it's a service there. Largely they are paid people to drive people from the air strips into McMurdo Station to and from people, you know, arriving in Antarctica and leaving. But they weren't going to pay people to drive on recreational trips and things like that. So they had a group of volunteers who would do that. So, for example, the New Zealand base was not far. It was about 3 kilometers from the American base in McMurdo. So we volunteers would drive people to American Night, which was once a week. The New Zealand base would open up their base for visitors. So we would drive people to that. And we would also drive to recreational opportunities during the summer, which was winter here, but it was summer there. When the sea ice is moving, various wildlife makes an appearance, and just the nature of what the ice looks like was great for photographers. So we volunteers would drive people to these different locations for recreational trips. And that was important for people too, because to keep morale up when you're working far from home and things like that, it's nice to have these other opportunities to do things outside of work. And finally, I also volunteered as a guide for Scott's Hut, which was built by Robert Falcon Scott and his team on their expedition to the South Pole in 1911. So that hut is still standing, and you could take tours. So I gave tours to, among other groups, the New Zealand Defense Forces. And that was an interesting thing, way to meet people and to see things that maybe I otherwise wouldn't see.
Yeah, and how many countries have stations or bases there on the South Pole? Is it like a little mini UN or?
Yeah, so I believe that there are 37 to 40 countries that have some presence for research in Antarctica. So there's a lot of activity going on there, from everything from meteorology and astronomy to glaciology and geology and all of these different things. So a lot of countries have a lot of different scientists doing a lot of research there.
Yeah, and it probably can't be an easy gig to get, right? Didn't you have to go through kind of an arduous process to get accepted or get the gig down there?
Yeah. I had been applying for various positions for a while, and then there's physical qualifications you have to go through, and it can be an arduous process, yeah. Because you're going to be there for a long time with different people, so that, you know, they try to get the right people for the job.
Yeah, no, and it makes sense. And then you were there for, you said, 6 months, and so you were there a solid 6 months. It's not like you can take like a jaunt to the beach or anything like that. Right?
Correct. Yes, I was there from October through February.
In that summer, right?
That summer
down there. And so, how much was it, light most of the time or dark most of the time? How'd the light go?
Yeah, so I don't remember the exact dates, but the sun rose permanently at the end of October. And it didn't set again until sometime in February.
Wow.
So even at 2 a.m., you know, when you're out hiking, it's the sun is up.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. And is there a lot – you're in pretty cramped quarters though, right? Was it kind of weird to get used to that? Or, I mean, you know what you're getting into, I guess, right?
Yeah, it worked out pretty well because I had one roommate who turns out that I got along with well. And it's funny how we mentioned earlier, when I was in Mississippi, I ran into somebody from Bernardsville. I was working in communications, and it was – some overnight shift, 2 or 3 in the morning. A guy walked into the communications office for some administrative purpose, and I came to find out that he was from Mendham, New Jersey. So we were 11,000 miles from home, and we end up running into each other. You're back home, we live 10 miles apart.
That's cool. Yeah. That's funny. Well, that brings me to a story that's also related to us. So when my cousin was in the Peace Corps in Guatemala, and he was in Guatemala City for something, getting his paperwork shuffled or something like that. And some other guy came in and was doing intake or something. And the guy mentions where he's from and whatever, what house he lives in and all this stuff, gives his address. And my cousin looks over. He's like, "That's the house I grew up in, Mahwah, New Jersey." It's like, freaky.
It's amazing how that ends up happening.
Yeah. I know. And so the connection with the Guatemala is, so my cousin, they have a couple of families they've adopted down there, and they don't have a lot of internet connectivity. They have some, but they definitely don't have computers and all this other stuff. So he was asking if we could help with a couple of computers for the family down there. And so I took one of my kids' laptops and I gave it to Scott because of his computer expertise, and he cleaned it up and charged it up and fixed it up, and we sent it down to Guatemala for the family to use to do their homework and stuff.
Yeah, and I was happy to do that. Things like that are really important too, because a lot of people around the world could use help from other people around the world. And if, you don't necessarily have to be in their neighborhood or nearby. There's a lot of things that we can do to help people just because they're people, regardless of where they are.
I love that, just because they're people. Because I always try and say that, you know, we all share in our humanity. We're all people on this earth, different places. Or the one guy that was on my show, he said, you know, we're all neighbors on this giant rock. And you've been to more parts of the rock than most.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way of looking at things. People are people, and if we can help them, then we'll help them.
I've been almost a decade focusing on literacy in Asia and Africa, and I've never set foot in either. So, but I just, again, I like the mission. I like the people running the mission. It spoke to me. It literally hit me like a lightning bolt, and I've been full bore ever since. And hopefully I'll get to visit one of the countries in the next few years when I have more time, but it didn't. I didn't have to be there and be on the soil to have it resonate with me in wanting to help.
Right. So it's not depending on what you're doing in your volunteer endeavors. People need help, and if we can help them in some capacity, it doesn't really matter where you are or where they are. I think what you do in Room to Read is just tremendous, because you can help people wherever they are with their need for literacy and education and different activities like that are very important.
Well, and I like to tell people, too, they're like, oh, it's so great, you do this. And I say, well, really, I'm totally selfish because I have so much fun doing it. So it's okay to be selfish in your volunteer work, too. So, all right, well, we're going to take another quick break, and we will be back.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
The traffic is stuck. Max Living, brought to you by the Max Challenge of Clinton, New Jersey. Join me, your host, Mark LaRose, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. I'll be discussing important health and fitness subjects, featuring guests and success stories. We are here to help motivate you. It's a beautiful day.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith, and we are back on Happy to Help. And I finally got the camera pointed to Scott. We're talking to Scott Kessel, who is a voracious volunteer in the community and has been volunteering around the world in his endeavors. And we're going to go back to the roots for a minute. And we found out we have another connection in that our fathers both worked for IBM when we were growing up. And my dad was a customer engineer, so he went out to fix all the mainframes. He was like a mechanic for the mainframes, I guess you would say. He grew up on a farm, so he could fix anything anyway. And you said your dad also grew up, or worked for IBM.
Yes, he did. My dad worked for IBM in Manhattan. And I remember when I was a kid, I think he did a lot of what your dad might have done. He worked on, you know, on computers and mainframes and that stuff. But I remember when I was a kid, Dad participated in something called the Junior Achievement Program, which was a volunteer thing through IBM, and it helped young people prepare for careers in business and things of this nature. So I remember every once in a while, you know, Dad's not going to be home for dinner tonight because he's had this Junior Achievement thing. And I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. I was young. But I remember that going on through life. And also, you know, Dad was a coach. He coached Little League baseball and basketball and soccer and all these things when I was young. So I remember thinking that, you know, not everything has to be in exchange for money and that there are other things to do to help people. And that's another point I think that a lot of people can take from this is volunteering doesn't necessarily have to involve outside organizations and things like that. You can volunteer to coach, you know, at your kid's school or volunteer to tutor or things like this. And that's also valuable work. That's also volunteering. And that's also volunteering to help make people's lives better, kids playing sports or musical instruments or things like that. And if you volunteer your time that way, like my dad did, then maybe that rubs off on somebody. And as they grow up in their life, maybe they get that volunteer bug. And I think that might have been where I got it.
Yeah, no, I think so. Well, and it's funny because one of my favorite stories is one of my Toastmaster buddies. He's like, well, I don't volunteer. And then, it, I mean, not that he didn't want to, but he was talking about how there's neighbors down the street and the parents both work and they were having some trouble and they just needed someone to walk their child to the bus stop in the morning. And he's retired and And so he does that. I'm like, that's volunteering. That's right. that counts. I mean, that's amazing. You know, you're doing such a service for these parents, and their little son is cared for, and he gets on the bus okay. And he, you know what I mean? I'm like, that's it.
Yep.
That, you know,
and that's
simple.
Important work.
Yes.
It's something important to make somebody else's life a little easier.
Yeah. Well, my dad likes to joke because he's in his 70s, and he said, well, I drive the old people to their doctor's appointments. So he does that, just, you know, driving, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah, you're a driver. You could do that as well in your spare time.
Yeah, you know, my mom has done that recently as well. She's volunteered to help people, you know, take them to doctor's appointments, and I think she does that through a local church.
Yep.
And it's just something that doesn't take a lot of time. You're able to help somebody in some capacity. It gives them what they need. You meet somebody new, and you feel good. And everybody wins. And you know, volunteering doesn't always need to require a lot of training and a lot of time and a lot of things like this. I also do something for an organization called CoCoRoz. It's called the Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network. And what they do is simple. The volunteers measure precipitation.
Yeah.
And report it every day. Takes 5 minutes a day. And this is important for drought monitoring, flooding, how much moisture there is in the soil. It's interesting because I am interested in the weather and meteorology and all that stuff as just as a hobby. But it's something that you could do for 5 minutes a day that contributes data. And when hundreds of people do it, there's thousands of people do it across the country, it provides valuable data for forecasts and research and things like that, all on a volunteer basis. And it's something simple anybody can do. So that's just another example of people might not realize it.
Yeah.
But that's something simple they can
do. You know a lot more than I
yeah.
do. So how did you get into that, to doing that?
I've been involved and interested in the weather since I was a boy. And somehow I came across it probably on some weather site on the internet and thought, well, that's an interesting thing. So I bought a rain gauge and I signed up, and that's it. I think I was the second station in Somerset County to get set up with it. And now I know several people who do it. And it's interesting because you can get different precipitation readings from the same town. And that very yep. localized stuff is valuable to forecasting and research.
Right. Well, I say that all the time because there's a gazillion microclimates around here. Because my husband will call and be like, oh, you know, he's at work. He's like, oh, it's raining, right? The lawn. I'm like, nope, not a drop. You know, I mean, and, you know, Chester gets the snow and we're dry as a bone. And yeah, it's crazy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I find it incredibly interesting. And sometimes I think I'll drive my wife nuts telling her that such and such town that she never heard of got 8 inches of snow. And she's like, did we get any? No? Okay. But it's interesting stuff, and it's just a cool thing, I think, to be involved in.
Well, yeah, and I think that's, if you've got a little bit of curiosity about anything, there's probably a way you can work volunteering into it, right? You know,
yeah.
I mean, you just got to be open and curious and talk to people. And I think in human interaction, there's a lot of people that are just so lonely, and any kind of human interaction is worth gold if you just spend a few moments to talk to someone. I mean, I know everyone's not an extrovert, and you know, some people are more introverted, but it's still a human connection is still so important for so many people.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot of things that you can do, whether it's visiting people at, you know, anything from a nursing home or something like that. Maybe people don't have family in the area. Maybe they have some program where you can go and volunteer to just be with people.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a local veterans group or a VA hospital or something can have people volunteer to just come and talk to people. You can also do that at animal shelters that I've mentioned. You can go and spend time with these animals that maybe don't get a lot of human interaction because there are so many of them, and shelter workers can only spend so much time. Volunteer with your local shelter, just being with animals.
Mm-hmm.
It'll make you feel better, and it'll make them feel a little bit better about being where they are.
Yeah, but some of them, too, they've got the restrictions, again, with all the attorneys and the different restrictions nowadays. Sometimes you have to be of a certain age to actually walk a dog, but can you still be in the facility or with your supervised or whatever?
I would imagine that these types of policies vary depending on the organization, but it could never hurt to go and say, do you have anything that I can do? And maybe they tell you come back when you're 16.
Yeah.
or something like that. Maybe you can do it with adult supervision.
Yeah, and I also say it's a great way to connect with your kid, right? If they require an adult to go with you, I mean, go with your child and spend some time at a shelter and you volunteer together. I mean, that's really great too.
Absolutely. There are a number of people, you know, from my dad when I was young, right up to business owners that I meet with and network with now, who coach various sports teams to spend time with their kids because everybody's busy. Kids are busy in school. Parents are busy working and their businesses and things. And if they can set aside some time to volunteer and at the same time spend time with their kids, then
win-win. You
know, that's win-win. And you're volunteering to help other people's kids too by coaching.
Yeah. No, that's true. And I love what you said at the beginning was mentoring. And when we had Fran Hauser speak at our breakfast last week, she's mentored hundreds of women. And because she said when she was coming up the ranks, her parents weren't in business, and she was in the business world, and she did have some mentors, but she thought that was so key to her success that she wants to give it back, turn around, and mentor other people. And you said you mentor folks at the firehouse, and I mean that's so important, is to either seek out a mentor if one doesn't present itself, or if you're experienced, then mentor someone else, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, when I first joined the fire company, I didn't know, you know, what was what. And it took people who had experience to show me how to do things, how to deal with the public, how to lead other people, how to use the equipment. And ultimately, that made me a better firefighter. So after I'd been there for a number of years, when new people come in, you try to be welcoming. These people are volunteering their time. You need to make it a pleasant experience, and you need to make it clear that their contribution is valuable. And to do that, you familiarize them with what's going on, how to do things, so that they know that they're making a valuable contribution. They're not just showing up. They're there for a reason, and their contribution is important.
Yeah, and it's also building a sense of confidence and accomplishment, which I think a lot of kids today are lacking because they're just all wrapped up in academics and anxiety and loneliness. And so if you step out of your comfort zone a little bit and then you have a mentor to guide you, and at first when something seems foreign or I can't do this or you get frustrated and then you come out on the other side, it's just transformative.
Yeah, absolutely. The self-confidence thing is huge because if you think about it, many volunteer fire, EMS, and things like that, in some cases, somebody's life is at stake. And talk about confidence building. I mean, you're the person there helping. You're the person there to put the fire out or to help somebody in some manner. And if not you, you're it. And the same thing with caring for animals. These animals rely on people to care for them and to help them get homes and things like that. You can't help and save all the animals, but the ones you do, for them it means the world.
Right, and you may not even know the impact that you have because it's not always apparent, but it definitely, you'll know the impact it has on you, yourself, because you feel it. You can't help it, right? That's why I say it's addictive because it's such a good feeling, win-win-win all the way around But you have to find the right opportunity, and sometimes it takes a couple tries and a couple experiences to get there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say that I'm very lucky in that most of my volunteer endeavors, I love doing them. As soon as you get into it, you realize, oh, this is where I should be, and this is what I should be doing to help. And I've been lucky in that those organizations that I've volunteered with and continue to volunteer with are doing important work, so you have a sense of purpose, and most importantly, the people with whom I work. As I said earlier, it's a privilege to work with many of these people.
Right. Well, I think you're kind of like me you've never found a volunteer opportunity you didn't like.
True. Yes.
I mean, we have to stop. My husband's like, stop. When are you going to stop? I'm like, well, but I just love it. So it's a good addiction to have, all right?
It is.
So, all right. Well, it was been a pleasure, Scott. And well, how can people find you if they need computer help? Liberty Corner, what's it called again?
Well, it's libertycornercomputers.com.
All right, well, that's easy.
So, terrific. Yep.
All right, well, thank you.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, Your Ameriprise financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Former U.S.-Ukraine envoy Kurt Volker, who testified exclusively last week behind closed doors as part of the impeachment inquiry, is back on Capitol Hill. A surprise follow-up deposition, again, behind closed doors. And a former senior advisor to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Michael McKinley, is also being deposed behind closed doors. Pompeo and Vice President Mike Pence are heading to Turkey, hoping to get a ceasefire in the Turkish invasion of northern Syria, which has been targeting the Kurds, who'd been fighting with U.S. forces to rid the region of ISIS.
It's precisely the reason we're headed there today, to try and take down that set of risk, most importantly for the United States, to ensure that the work that has been done to reduce the risk to the American people, which after all is our first and foremost priority, to reduce the risk to the American people, is fully addressed.
He was speaking on Fox, and this is USA Radio News.
Friends and family, I've told you about the great sleep I get with my MyPillow every night. Well, right now, you can get a great deal and extra safety, because if you go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special, get their buy one, get one free offer on the MyPillow Premium Pillow. Your 60-day money-back guarantee goes all the way through March 1st, 2020. That's now through December 25th. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special and use my promo code USA.
An official message from Medicare.
It's open enrollment, Fred. Time to compare plans.
Oh, Alice, we're fine with what we have.
Well, that's what the Johnsons thought until they tried Medicare's new Plan Finder.
The Johnsons, huh?
We saved on our prescription costs.
And got extra benefits. Come on, Fred, maybe we'll find something better.
Plans change every year. Use the new Plan Finder at Medicare.gov to compare health and drug plans. Open enrollment ends December 7th.
What do you know? Comparing plans really pays.
Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders getting endorsed by some progressives, including Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, who's expected to formally endorse Sanders during a rally this upcoming Saturday. The Vermont senator is also getting the endorsement of Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota and Rashida Tlaib of Michigan. Hispanics will be the largest voting minority in 2020 for the first time ever. That's according to the Pew Research Center, which is reporting that a record 32 million Hispanic Americans will be eligible to vote next year. That's up from 27.3 million in 2016. Mrs. Doubtfire coming to Broadway? A new musical based on the classic 90s movie starring Robin Williams will open at the Stephen Sondheim Theater next spring. Find us online at usaradio.com.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
UAW members hoping the end is near for the GM strike, that is. General Motors CEO Mary Barra and President Mark Royce are now in contract talks with top union officials, and that's giving hope to striking workers that a new contract could be coming soon. Yesterday's bargaining session, the second time that Barra has been at the table in the past week. The strike by the UAW is in its fifth week, and GM has lost over $1 billion as a result of that work stoppage. AMC Theaters has a new streaming service. The nation's leading movie theater is now going to offer the streaming service for members of its loyalty program. Now, members of the AMC Stubs program can access about 2,000 films from every major studio to rent or buy and watch at home. The company says it hopes to add films from AMC networks by the end of this year. There are about 20 million AMC Stubs members at last check. Howie Kendrick of the Washington Nationals being named the MVP of the National League Championship Series. Kendrick notching 5 hits in that series, including 4 doubles and driving in 4 runs while scoring himself 4 times. The 36-year-old, the third oldest player in history to win the National League Most Valuable Player, the Nationals beating St. Louis in 4 straight to now be heading to the World Series. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Former U.S.-Ukraine envoy Kurt Volker, who testified exclusively last week behind closed doors as part of the impeachment inquiry, is back on Capitol Hill. A surprise follow-up deposition, again, behind closed doors. And a former senior advisor to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Michael McKinley, is also being deposed behind closed doors. Pompeo and Vice President Mike Pence are heading to Turkey, hoping to get a ceasefire in the Turkish invasion of northern Syria, which has been targeting the Kurds, who'd been fighting with U.S. forces to rid the region of ISIS.
It's precisely the reason we're headed there today, to try and take down that set of risk, most importantly for the United States, to ensure that